This is a Hog Sports Network podcast.
Hey, it's Wednesday, May 8th, 2024. Did you watch the Kentucky Derby over the weekend? Because that's kind of how it feels like the SEC baseball race is going. You got all of these teams that are neck and neck coming down the stretch, and it ought to be fun over the final six games. Arkansas with two big series remaining, beginning this weekend with Mississippi State. We'll talk about it today with Bubba Carpenter, but first a word from our sponsor.
Kendall King, where it's all about teamwork. Building brands around a design concept, Kendall King takes pride in their skill sets in displays and signing, as well as dot-com photography, content creation, and influencer marketing. The bases are loaded, and the Kendall King team is bringing it home. This is the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast, presented by Kendall King, the first podcast devoted entirely to Arkansas baseball, featuring insight from Arkansas baseball color analyst Bubba Carpenter. Here's your host, Matt Jones.
And good morning. If you're watching us on our social media pages, Matt Jones here with Bubba Carpenter in our downtown Fayetteville studio. The first time that we've done a podcast this year where Arkansas had lost its most recent game. We've always been fortunate enough to have a midweek game to talk about, even if things didn't go their way at the end of the weekend. Razorbacks are in the middle of their finals week right now. They'll pick things back up on Friday at Baumwalker Stadium against Mississippi State, a really good Mississippi State team, by the way. One who's kind of surging here at the end of the year, kind of like Sierra Leone. Did you watch the Derby on Saturday, Bubba?
You know, I watched the replay. I was coaching, so okay. I missed it, but I went back and watched the replay. It was crazy.
That was a great finish. And like I said a minute ago, it kind of feels like that's how the SEC race is going right now. I mean, you got Kentucky kind of by a nose, and you got Arkansas and Tennessee running neck and neck. A&M's not far behind. Mississippi State, they might be able to make a stretch run depending on what goes on here this weekend in Fayetteville, because they get Missouri next week in Starkville. So if they can pull an upset this week, you know, you got to watch for them at the end.
Yeah, sure. You know, watching the Kentucky Derby, going back to that, I'd love to hear Phil Elson. First of all, I love Phil Elson. Great play-by-play guy. I would love to hear him do play-by-play on the Kentucky Derby. How does that guy keep up with that? That's incredible
to me. Larry Collins, who's the announcer for NBC, there's two different announcers. You've got the track announcer, who everyone can hear if you're, you know, actually in the stadium, or the Churchill Downs in this instance, and then you've got the NBC announcer, and the NBC announcer messed up. He did not see Mystic Dan, and what I'm guessing probably happened is that he's watching through his binoculars, and he doesn't see the horse that surged on the rail. And so I'm wondering, I think that maybe a couple of times there have been races at the Kentucky Derby where the play-by-play or the announcer did not see the horse come up on the rail. So I'm wondering if there's maybe an obstructed view or something there that causes it, but where they can't see it. But in my opinion, the two most exciting announcers, if you will, and I'm not talking about any individual, but is a good horse racing announcer and a good hockey announcer. Those guys are, because I mean, those sports are so fast paced. You know, you're trying to keep up with names that, you know, horses, who knows where these names come from. And then hockey, you've got a lot of those, you know, Eastern European names that are real hard to, and I'm always fascinated with those guys who can do it well.
Yeah. I think the horse, I think all the crazy names of the horses, the way they just like just flow right off their tongue. I think I'm sure they practice it. I would assume that they practice all those names ahead of time, but I'm always impressed with it. Pretty incredible the way they keep up with it.
Yeah. I mean, it's fascinating. What would you name a horse?
Oh, that's a great
question.
Well,
see, like Mystic, Mystic Dan, who won the Derby the other day, you know, there's a lot of Arkansas ties with that horse. You've got the Hamby brothers, who are from Hot Springs. You've got the Gassaways, who are from Monticello. You know, both of them, or all of those two families, have ownership stakes in the horse. And so the horse was named for the Hamby's father, Dan, and for his first job, which was selling Mystic tape. And so, I don't know,
that's cool.
It's interesting how they find these names.
I like the story behind a lot of names, because it seems like every horse has like a really good story behind the name. And so for me, that's interesting.
Well, Arkansas was in Kentucky during the Derby, playing in Lexington. Obviously lost two of three games last weekend. Blew Kentucky out in game one. Kentucky blew out Arkansas in game two. Game three was somewhat competitive, although Arkansas got behind in the middle innings and just couldn't, you know, make that move to get back into the game. As you watched the series last weekend, what were your main takeaways?
Well, I was surprised at how good Kentucky was, to be honest with you. I I'm one of those that I was kind of a Kentucky doubter all year. Mm-hmm. I said, well, the schedule's going to get tougher for them at the end of the year. They're gonna fade like they tend to do. They get off to good starts and they tend to fade. And man, I was impressed with their offense, to be honest with you. But then I was more impressed with what Hagan Smith was able to do against their offense. 14 strikeouts in 6 innings. Mm-hmm. That team doesn't strike out very much. They're averaging 7 strikeouts a game. He struck them out 14 times in 6 innings. That goes to show you how good Hagan is. Hagan gave up 1 run. He shouldn't have given up any. Jared Sprigelot probably should have caught the line drive. Mm-hmm. If not, mm-hmm. the guy got picked off. The only thing I think I can say bad about Peyton Stovall the whole year is that was a bad tag at second base. When they had the guy picked off, mm-hmm. He put the glove down, guy slid around him. You got to make sure you slap that tag. And the guy ended up scoring. Next guy hits a double, but that guy should have never scored. So Hagan actually shouldn't have given up any runs in that game, but he gave up 1 earned one. But back to your point, I was really impressed with – how good their offense was, top to bottom. They battle. They put the ball in play. They take advantage of any mistake you make. If a pitcher's one look in you, they're going to steal. I mean, they just look for opportunities to take that extra base. Now, their pitching, I wasn't impressed with Kentucky pitching. I think they gave us multiple chances. They walked guys. They hit guys. We had runners on base. Felt like all weekend and just couldn't get that big hit.
What does Arkansas have to do to get that big hit? Because that's been the, you know, that's been the bugaboo for this team a lot this year. In the games they've lost. And I think it's important to note they're 40-9.
I know.
You know, and it's like, so when they lose 2 games in a row, it's like, oh, what's going wrong? But they've got a cushion, you know, there because of what they had done to this point. I noted this the other night. When they beat Kentucky in game 1, it was their second fastest ever to 40 wins. The only team that was faster was the team you were on in 89.
Yeah.
You started 40-6. Beat your chest over that. But, you know, 40-7 start, you know, 40-9, these are still great records that they have. It's just, you know, the losses tend to magnify things.
But isn't it crazy, though, man? Like I said, I was coaching all weekend. I don't know how many people came up to me, and they're no one feels – I don't say no one. There's just kind of a – it doesn't feel positive. Like, the feedback I'm getting is not positive. And I keep telling them, look, we're in first place still in SC West. We got 40 wins. I think there's only 2 teams in the country with 40 wins
Arkansas
right now.
A&M, yeah.
I mean, look, it's a good year. Now, you can look at that and say, okay, what gets me excited is we're where we're at, and we haven't played our best baseball yet. I mean, we still haven't. We've still made some mistakes. We've left runners on base. We've got guys in key positions that aren't hitting like we know they can. Mm-hmm. But yet, we're still where we're at, and that's a testament to these guys. I've said all along, it's a special group of players. Good teams find a way to win. Bad teams find a way to lose. And these guys, even though their offensive numbers aren't there, and you know, you can point fingers and you can say we're leaving runners on base, they're finding ways to win games. And at the end of the day, the scoreboard matters.
Hagan Smith. I want to go back to him because I feel like we don't talk about him enough. We go on these podcasts and you know, we kind of dissect. You know, this is what we've seen. This guy is surging. This guy's falling behind. But Hagan's been so consistent that we don't really talk about him a whole lot. And, you know, the season that he's putting together, if you look at what he's done through 12 starts, very comparable to what Paul Skeens did through 12 starts last year. In fact, some of his numbers are better than Skeens. I think the ERA is better. I don't know that the whip is as good. Strikeouts per 9 are about equal. And we thought last year that Paul Skeens was the best pitcher we've ever seen in college baseball, or certainly, you know, in the last 10, 15 years. And Hagan's come along and he's not the same pitcher. Obviously, he's left-handed. Skeens was right-handed. They pitched differently. But, you know, as I look at the Golden Spikes race, which, you know, we're kind of getting down maybe 4 or 5 weeks left before they finish that or before they name that. Golden Spikes and the Dick Houser Trophy is another national trophy of the year that, you know, I think they do a good job in their selection. It feels like it's a race right now between a great pitcher and a great hitter, whether it be, you know, Hagan as the pitcher, far and away the best pitcher in the country.
Right.
Hitter, maybe Charlie Condon, maybe Travis Bazana at Oregon State, maybe Caglione at Florida, although I don't know that he's going to maybe generate as much as the other two because his team has not been as successful as Georgia and Oregon State's been. How do you evaluate this? Because to me it's like Hagan has to be great every night. Otherwise, you know, if he has one bad night, his ERA might jump up 70 points.
Right.
Hitter, you can have a couple of bad nights, but as long as you got the 32 home runs, that's what people are focused on. And so, I don't know, it's an interesting evaluation, I think, between Hagen as a pitcher and these great hitters as far as National Player of the Year awards go.
Well, you look at Hagen, look at his very first start when it was 30 degrees, you know, just
that was the bad
one inning. Yeah. You take that away and then look at his numbers. But you're right, one bad inning can change things as a pitcher. But what's incredible about Hagen, you talk about the stats, I think he's leading. They showed a comparison of him and Paul Skenes during the broadcast on the ESPN. His whip isn't as good as Skenes, but I want to say every other number is better than Paul Skenes at this same time during the year. I mean, he's just been dominant, and you say we brush over him every week, and I think we kind of do, because what else can you say about him? How many more adjectives can you use to describe how good he's been? And the thing about him, he's pitching Friday night against the other team's ace. You know, you don't get a lot of run support on Friday night, so you know your margin for error is so small. And I think that's what's amazing. He's able to go out in there consistently, throw up really good numbers on a Friday.
I mean, how good would you say Hagen has been? Has he been better than Paul Skenes was last year?
Well,
is that a fair comparison?
Through my Razorback goggles, yeah. I tell you, I thought Razorbacks did well against Paul Skenes. I liked our approach, and no one has approached Hagen like we approached Paul Skenes. We had a great approach against him, scored some runs, beat him. We did beat him, right?
Yeah, well, I don't know if he took the loss in Hoover, and then he took a no decision in Baton Rouge because he was down 1-0 when he came out in the seventh or eighth inning, and then I think LSU hit a home run to tie it in the eighth, and Arkansas ends up winning it in extras. But to your point, it was, you know, he didn't lose. LSU didn't lose many games when he was on the mound last year, and two of the games where they did lose were to Arkansas.
Go Hogs, right? But
those games, Hagen Smith and Hunter Holland combined were his equal, if not better. Yeah.
Well, I just haven't seen a team yet approach Hagen Smith and have a good approach or have a successful approach. I know what they're all trying to do. They haven't done it against Hagen, and that's just a testament to how good he is. Because, I mean, look, we're deep into the season right now. Other teams know what Hagen's going to do, and they still can't hit it. And to me, that's what's incredible, Matt, is they know what's coming. And even when they sit on that slider, they're not hitting it. And he doesn't just get you out. I mean, he makes you look bad. I mean, he really does. You see good SEC hitters look really bad against Hagen. And, you know, I say all the time, you know, the analytics are great. We love them. But at the end of the day, you can use your eyes. Mm-hmm. That hitter's reaction to your pitch, that's going to tell you how good his stuff is. And it doesn't take much to see that his stuff is dominant.
What do you call his third pitch? Would you call it a changeup, a splitter?
A split finger change.
Okay.
Yeah, it's nasty. It's, you know, upper 80s.
Because to me, that's been the evolution of Hagen over the last 4 or 5 weeks, is that the slider was great at the start of the year. The fastball's been electric. That third pitch has really started to come along for him. It seems like he trusts it more in two-strike situations.
Yeah, I think so. And the beautiful thing about that is, you know, it's got a little bit of depth on it. It's got a little arm side run away from righties. I don't know how many times he's thrown it to a lefty. Probably not very many times. But I tell you what, he uses against righties, and it's a great pitch, because if I'm facing a guy and he's a two-pitch guy, I like my chances. I didn't face a lot of Hagen Smiths back in the day. But adding that third pitch is just that third thing that a hitter has to think about. And, you know, you start thinking about, okay, he's got the slider, he's got the upper 90s fastball, ooh, and then he's got a splitty, you know, upper 80s to 90. Split finger chain. So it's, man, the arsenal is just ridiculous.
There you are, putting the Y on the end of everything again. Your splitties, your punchies.
Yeah, my bad.
You know, the record watch with Hagen is something I think is interesting. He's barring something unforeseen, he's going to break David Walling's single season strikeout record at Arkansas. Walling had 155 and 121 and a third innings in 99. Just to put that in comparison, Hagen right now, 30 fewer strikeouts and almost 50 fewer innings. He's thrown 66 innings this year, 125 Ks for him. And then he's chasing Nick Schmidt's record for career strikeouts at Arkansas, which I think he's probably going to reach too. In fact, he could reach that before he reaches David Walling's record. He only needs 21 more strikeouts to pass Nick Schmidt as the the career K champion at Arkansas, and I think he's going to break both of those.
It's crazy, isn't it? I mean, it's remarkable.
12 and starts with double-digit strikeouts for him, by the way, this year.
I'm sorry,
12 starts total, 9 double-digit strikeouts.
Well, and then once again, you go back to James Madison, that first start.
Throw it out the window, right?
Yeah. What if it would have been 50 degrees instead of 30 that day, mm-hmm. and he gets 10 more Ks that game? Yeah, he probably wouldn't have got. He might have got 10. Would have been on a lower pitch count, but it would have been easy for him to get 10 that day.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about even better numbers.
The other pitchers are, I don't know if it's a concern right now. Tiger had been really good for about 3 weeks, I think, before he was not good at Kentucky. I think he only threw 66 pitches, 37 for strikes. Mason Molina comes along the next day. He's not any better. I think it was 40 strikes and 67 pitches. And you only get 3 innings out of your games, 2 and 3 starters. And that's really not been something that we've seen this Arkansas or with this Arkansas team this year, where their starters get out pitched. I don't think you can say it any other way. In game 2 and game 3, their starters got out pitched. They didn't make it as deep into the game as the Kentucky starters did. May see a change this weekend in the rotation. We think that Gage Wood may be in line for a weekend start. That's kind of what Dave Van Horn's been hinting at. Yeah. The feeling here is that it would probably be Molina's place that he takes, because Molina, you go back even a couple of weeks, he didn't pitch well against South Carolina, had 7 walks in that game, then didn't pitch against Florida because of the ankle injury. How do you evaluate starters 2 and 3 right now behind Hagen Smith?
Well, I'm going to go back and look at, like, Brady's start. So you look at the second inning that Brady was out there. You remember he walked the leadoff guy.
Is this the Lovich play?
It's getting ready to be the Lovich play. Okay. Before the Lovich play, there was the comebacker that hit off his glove. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Runner at first base, not a routine ball, but fairly routine. If he lets that ball go, it hit off his glove, and he'll normally field that. But if he lets it go, Stovall was right behind him. Stovall was already in a fielding position. That's an easy 4-6-3 double play. So that play didn't get made, and then the ball gets hit to Lovich in left field.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Lovich drifted on it. As an outfielder, we're taught, find the fence. You mm-hmm. got to go back and find the fence. You don't ever back up into a wall. Worst thing you can do as an outfielder, back up into a wall. You have to turn, create an angle, use your offhand to find it. I don't know if you can see it on the screen or not, but you use your offhand to find it, your glove hand. It was just a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
That's twice Lovich has done that this year, but it's been costly both times. So if either one of those plays get made, Matt,
mm-hmm.
I think, you know, look how many more pitches he threw after that, you know, and they end up scoring 3 runs that inning. But that gets him out of the inning quick. He goes to the 3rd inning fresh.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're talking about a different start and possibly a series win. Now, that's me being optimistic.
Mm-hmm.
But baseball, with the momentum and everything, mm-hmm. we get out of that inning, no one scores. I think it's a different ballgame.
This changes how you feel about the 5th, 6th innings.
It really does. It really does, to be honest with you. And now, maybe it wouldn't change anything. But in my game of what ifs, when I go through a game and say, what if this, what if that, what if this, it can kill. It'll drive you nuts when you do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I look at all the things that could have happened to change the outcome. And usually it does change the outcome.
Mm-hmm. I think we're about to be able to pull up this Ross Lovich play here in just a second, because there's another element to this play that I think is interesting. At Kentucky, there's no warning track. Now, you got the brown grass, you know, the brown turf right there at the warning track. And I think Blake has got the play queued up here if you want to pull it up, Blake. You know, so here's the play we're talking about with Ross Lovich. How much does this affect the outfielder that there's no dirt there under his feet, maybe to tell him where he is on the field? Or is that an excuse?
Yeah, it's an excuse.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, as an outfielder, you know where the fence is. You've got the 6th sense. You know where, unless you're running full speed, like on that play right there, he knows exactly where the fence is mm-hmm. as an outfielder, because the ball's coming, but you know that you can sense the fence right there. All you got to do is make one step, a drop step with his left foot, and boom, he's got his hand on the fence, and he reaches up and makes that catch. Now, the ball carried farther than he thought it was going to, obviously, mm-hmm. but he drifted on it. And I'm not picking on Ross Lovich. I made the same mistake multiple times until I learned to create that angle.
Mm-hmm.
But as an outfielder, you work on it nonstop. Find the fence, find the fence, find your job is to find the fence and then come back to the ball if you need to.
That's one of the things that they've been impressed with, I think, with Peyton Holt in the limited amount of time that he's played left field, because I don't know if it was the first game or the second game against Alabama, but he had a play like that where he put his hand out and down the fence and made a play at the track.
Right. We actually broke that down one day, Phil and I did, and you know, it was because that's when we started talking about Peyton Holt. He's an outfielder playing. He doesn't look like an infielder playing outfielder. He looks like an outfielder right now. Peyton Holt does. A lot of times you take an infielder and you throw him out there, and you can tell he's an infielder trying to play outfield. You know, we saw it with Kendall Diggs last year. When Kendall first went to right field, you could tell he was an infielder learning to play outfield.
Like watching a colt learn how
to run. Yeah, so, if you want to go back to the horse racing. But, you know, Peyton just has a natural instinct. But Peyton Holt's a baseball player. He can play anywhere. He could probably pitch if we needed him to. So he can do anything on the field. He's just that type of guy. But, you know, that's a mistake by Lovich. And you know what? Next time it happens, I don't think he'll do it again. Mm-hmm. But those plays are really frustrating to DVH because, you know, I think he looks at the game the same way, through the same lens of what if we make one of those plays, that third inning's different, the fourth inning's different. Because Brady did have to throw. I didn't look – I should have broke down how many extra pitches he had to throw. Mm-hmm. I knew he threw a lot of extra pitches after that.
Yeah, I mean, probably about, I would say, 8 to 10 during that inning.
Yeah, at that least, play. Yeah.
Center field and left field, it's kind of it's still a question mark, I think, for this team. What are they going to do there? You've got a dilemma, right? I mean, you got Wilmsmeyer, who is a great defensive player.
Right.
One of, you know, I mean, he's up there with the best defensive players I think we've seen in center field at Arkansas during the Van Horn era, but he's not hitting. He's hitting 158 in SEC play. It seems like everything that they do with him, it's just not clicking. I think he's on an 0 for 23 streak right now after he went 0 for 2 in the first game against Kentucky. But then you don't play him in center field, and, you know, I mean, who's to say that he doesn't make a mistake? But Peyton Holt made a couple of plays in center that hurt the team at Kentucky.
Right.
If Peyton Holt's in left field, maybe he makes the play that Ross Lovich doesn't make there at the fence. And so it's a tough dynamic right now of what do you do? Are you an offensive team? Are you
right.
Or you know, do you construct the lineup with offense or defense in mind? And I'm glad I'm not in those shoes.
Yeah, I am too. I mean, you look at what's crazy, Matt. We know our record. We got 40 wins. We've already talked about it. This weekend we played three different left fielders, three different DHs, which is just crazy to think that this time of year there's not another SEC team doing that.
Right.
Probably not another team in the country doing it this time of year, playing three different left fielders, three different DHs in the course of a weekend series.
Some of it, and just to be fair, some of that's due to matchups.
Yeah, it is.
You know, Kentucky, they had a couple – their first two starters were really unique in that you had a right-hander who right-handers hit better against and a lefty that left-handers hit better against. Really unique splits there. But to your point, there just hasn't been any consistency at those two positions from game to game.
Right. And going back to Peyton Holt, you know, yeah, there was a tough play in left center he didn't make. Later, he made a really good play in left center. But the one play in left center he didn't make, he – normally would catch that ball, a tough play, bounced off his glove. And then, you know, the one in game three where he came up and he just kind of lost it on the transfer and it went behind him. Mm-hmm. Now, credit the Kentucky base runner. I can't remember who it was, Lopez maybe. I can't remember who it was. But he scored from first on that. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's busting it, and that's how Kentucky wins, is they're always looking to take the extra base. Not very many teams, even though the ball just got right behind him. Yep. It was just a simple transfer play. But right there as an outfielder, you take your time, and, you know, the runner's not going to score from first. Just field it and throw it into second. Mm-hmm. But it was, you know, just a routine mistake that happens sometimes. And maybe if Wilmsmeyer's out there, he doesn't make that. But at the same time, you know, I think the thing with Wilmsmeyer is he's just some of his at-bats, and once again, I'm not picking on it. I love Ty Wilmsmeyer. I love talking to him. He's a great kid. But he just hasn't had some competitive at bats at times, and in big situations. And so, you know, if you're Dave, you got to weigh. You know, I go back to Moneyball all the time. You know, what gives me the best chance? Is this guy going to save more runs then he drives in, or, you know, you just got to, there's so many things you have to look at.
It was about this point last year, because I think we were seeing it during the South Carolina series, because they were battling some injuries. They started bunting guys a lot, playing small ball toward the end of last year. Is there any thought, you think, maybe to putting Wilsmeyer in and just saying, hey, bunt two times and see if you can get it down?
Well, look what Wilsmeyer did against Florida. He got hit by a pitch, and he drew a big walk and scored twice.
Yeah, he did.
Huge runs in that game. You know, maybe you do that. You put him in
there. He's a game changer if he can get on base.
I mean, what's the dude's name from Bad News Bears that Buttermaker told him to go up there and just get hit?
You get thrown out of the game now if you do that.
But I don't know what – you know, I feel for Dave because I know he's trying really hard to find that right mix. Mm-hmm. And, look, I'm a glass three-quarters full guy. I look at these guys, and I watch them work. I watch them take BP, and I'm like, there's runs in this lineup. Mm-hmm. It just has to work. And I've said it to you probably every Wednesday that we've talked about it. I think a key piece to this is Kendall Diggs. Mm-hmm. Kendall comes up all the time. Look what happened Friday night. Kendall had two hits, four RBIs. We win going away. The next day, Kendall's up a couple of times with runners on scoring position. Didn't get it done. The same in game three.
He did have an RBI in game three, though.
Yes, he did have a base hit up the middle and an RBI. So I feel like Kendall's going in the right direction. I hope his shoulder's okay. I know he hit the ground hard again and was holding his shoulder, so I hope he's fine. But I think Kendall is the missing link in this lineup. We can talk about all the other guys, but, boy, he always seems to be up there with runners in scoring position.
Gage Wood, going back to him as a starter, what do you think? Because that kind of surprised me a little bit. I don't know that I saw that coming 3 weeks ago.
Well, so I've watched Gage grow up in Arkansas playing baseball. Mm-hmm. And you can look at all these guys. Every one of these guys were starters, you know, for the most part. Every pitcher on the staff was probably a stud starter. But I've watched Gage grow up playing baseball, pitching in showcase. He was a phenomenal starter. He's a five-pitch guy. To me, I think he's always been a starter, you know, and he just – I don't know that he's – now, you got to take your role. I mean, Brady Tiger was a starter. He did a great job his freshman year out of the bullpen. Gabe Gackle, starter. Mm-hmm. Next year, probably Friday night guy for us. Stud out of the bullpen this year. You got to pay your dues and earn that starting role. But I love Gage. I really do, Matt. I love him as a starter. It gives him a chance to use all his pitches. And to me, he seems more relaxed as a starter. He still has that fire in his eyes, but he seems at home out there as a starter.
Well, like against Kentucky, he comes in with base runners and it didn't go well. But then he starts the next few innings and they can't hit the fastball.
Yeah. And he stuck with that fastball. I mean, his breaking ball was okay, but they just couldn't hit the fastball. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a matter of him trusting it, relaxing it, and then having multiple innings to work through things. And I think he's just going to continue to get better. Now, I don't think they're going to make a change this weekend. I think if one of the guys struggle this weekend, you might see a different starting rotation when we go to A&M. I don't know.
The feeling I got is that they're going to make a change this weekend. But I don't know. We haven't seen the rotation for this weekend.
Okay, we'll make a bet on it. We'll make a little wager, side bet.
I would not be surprised if Gage would start in place of Mason Molina game three.
Possibly.
Or maybe they leave game three TBA and just see how things go leading up to game three. That wouldn't surprise me either.
I could see that. Now, I give Molina a little bit of a pass, and I'm not making an excuse for him. He's coming off an ankle injury. Mm. When you're coming off an ankle injury, you know, you can talk, you know, fancy, or you can call it a kinetic chain, whatever, but energy works from the ground up. So if your ankle isn't 100%, you know, or if something's just a little bit off, everything goes to your release point. Mm-hmm. It can affect that. An ankle affects release point because this is the end of the chain. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's not quite 100%. Maybe it wasn't 100%. Maybe he's still kind of working back. So I'm going to give him an excuse for that.
Just one more thought as we're about to go to break. They are without two left-handers in the bullpen now. Colin Fisher underwent surgery Monday on his elbow. We still don't know if that was Tommy John or an internal brace, but either way, he's going to be shelved for a while.
Right.
And then Hunter Dietz is going to sit out the rest of the season. He's not going to go to Cape Cod this summer. He's going to rest and rehab the elbow injury that's kind of flared up on him again earlier or last month in April. So if you don't pitch Molina in a starting position, that gives you another left-hander in the bullpen, and that's a valuable commodity for Arkansas. So just a thought.
It is a thought. The only problem with Molina coming out of the bullpen is when you're coming in out of the bullpen, you can't afford to walk people. He has a tendency to walk mm-hmm. people. You know, he throws that fastball at the top of the zone. If he's on, he's hitting that spot. If he's off, he's out of the zone up. That's the only problem with Molina out of the bullpen. But if you look, Molina doesn't really ever get hit hard. Mm-hmm. He did give up an 0-2 home run. Mm-hmm. And normally I would be like shaking my head because I hate 0-2 hits. I hate 0-2 balls hit hard. Mm-hmm. But he made a good pitch. Credit the guy, the leadoff man, for getting on top of the yeah. I mean, he's a good hitter, for getting on top of that and hitting it out of the yard, because that was a good pitch.
We got a lot more come on the Whole Hog Baseball podcast, but first a word from Kendall King.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are Design.
Bubba, did you see this football news yesterday? Arkansas gets a wide receiver commit from Monte Harrison, a 10-year pro baseball player. He'll be 29 when the football season begins. Played 3 years in the majors and spent, you know, parts of 10 in the minors. I mean, what are your thoughts about a pro baseball player coming back and playing football like this?
I tell you what, I think it's going to be awesome. I'll tell you, after I played 12 years of professional baseball, after 12 years of professional baseball, Matt, I would have loved to come back and knock some heads because I had a lot of frustration built up. Because
a lot of anger.
There's a lot of things going on yeah. in my head. So I would have loved to have come back and done that. I think it's neat. And I think it's neat that a guy comes back and he's ready to give it a chance at something else. I mean, it's not really like Michael Jordan-ish, but you mm-hmm. know, it's cool that, you know, he chased his dream of baseball. You know, he was a stud football player back in the day, and hey, I hope it works out for him. I'm pulling for him.
I've been a little bit surprised by the people who seem surprised that someone is trying this, because we actually see this fairly, you know, I don't know if I'd say routinely, but this is certainly not the first time, not even close to the first time, that we've seen somebody come from pro baseball and try their hand at college football. Chris Winkie did it. Mm-hmm. He won a Heisman Trophy and a national championship at Florida State. Brandon Whedon was a really good quarterback at Oklahoma State about a decade ago. He did the same thing. Even here at Arkansas, there have been some instances, that's a hard word to say, where guys have gone to pro baseball and they've come back and they played. Devon McClure, who you know well,
yeah,
he tried it. He didn't really do a whole lot in his football career at Arkansas. But Vincent Bradford was a defensive player, I think a linebacker in the 90s. He did this. Robbie Hampton was a starting quarterback for Arkansas in 2000 after spending 4 years in the Blue Jays organization. So it can be done. It has been done. We've seen it done before. And I would think that it would be a lot easier to go from baseball to football than to do the Tim Tebow route and try to go football to baseball.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. You know, baseball, the thing about baseball is so mental, and you get mentally tough playing baseball. And so I think you're right. Going from baseball to football is way easier than – you know, I don't know the flip side of it. That'd be hard to do, making mm-hmm. it, because baseball, I don't know. It's once you sit out a couple of years, it's hard to retrain that body. Mm. I mean, I just know, like I watched Michael Jordan back in the day making his comeback with the White Sox, and to see him on a basketball court, the way he moves, and he's just unbelievable. And to see him on a baseball field, he always just looked awkward. He
uncoordinated
almost. I hate to say Michael Jordan and uncoordinated in the same sentence, but he did. He looked uncoordinated on a baseball field. He just never looked. And, I mean, I got to watch him play, and I'm like, ooh, Michael, don't. MJ.
You know, I watch Michael Jordan play baseball every day. Space Jam is my six-year-old's favorite movie. I watch it every day. There's some great scenes in there. My favorite one is, you know, where he strikes out. Hey, Michael, you look good striking out. When I strike out, look bad. It's a great scene.
Oh, it's awesome.
We want to talk about the SEC standings here real quick. Blake's going to pull up this graphic. You can see Arkansas is a game back of Kentucky with six games to play. Arkansas and Tennessee tied for second there at 17 and 7 in the SEC. The Razorbacks still on top of the SEC West, a game ahead of A&M, 3 games ahead of Mississippi State as the Bulldogs come in this weekend. Arkansas's got the toughest route to a championship, and I wrote about this last week, and it's still true because Mississippi State's still kind of surging. I think they've won 8 of their last 10 against SEC competition. A&M's obviously going to be a tough team to beat down at Bluebell. You know, you look at the others. I mean, Kentucky, they've got a favorable route to win a championship if they can handle the pressure. And they handled it against Arkansas last weekend. That's a good start for them. They got to go to Florida. Florida, you know, I mean, they're kind of hot and cold, but they're fighting for their postseason lives if they've even got a chance at it right now. Yeah. It's going to be the last weekend for them at their ballpark in Gainesville. And then they got to come back and they got to play Vanderbilt, who's not playing up to Vanderbilt standards, but still Vanderbilt's going to be, you know, really fired up and playing for something when they go in there that last weekend.
Well, I tell you, you look at Kentucky going into Florida, Matt. I like Florida's chances. I see Florida winning that series because Kevin O'Sullivan's going to have them ready to play. They're fighting.
You might do an extra 200 push-ups before those games.
I think Florida, you look at their Florida players, they've got good players. Mm-hmm. They're just not playing good.
It kind of reminds you of Ole Miss a couple of years ago.
It does. It really does. I think I already said that last, I think when we were playing them, it reminds me of the Ole Miss team with the really good players that mm-hmm. just weren't getting it done. I think it's a matter of time till they start rolling. So I think Kentucky's going to have their hands full with Florida this weekend. So I think that could be beneficial to us. Now, against Vandy plays good on turf. They play well on turf. And so Vandy going into Kentucky, I mean, still, even though Vandy's scuffling a little bit, they're fighting for postseason, their life. So, I mean, look, it's not easy for Kentucky. Now, Tennessee, it's not easy for them. At Vandy, I think they're going to do well there. But then they got South Carolina coming in at home. That's South Carolina.
And they
good.
Got the burden of number one right now.
Yes.
They're number one in the poll.
Do you buy into that?
Well, I think it was a hard week to choose a number one because you had Arkansas that loses the series at Kentucky. A&M loses the series at LSU. Tennessee, they win their series at Florida, but they also had a midweek loss against Lipscomb. Lipscomb's like a 16-win team at that time.
Yeah.
And so I think it's just kind of the lesser of three evils, so to speak. And I think if you kind of look at the breakdown of how the coaches voted this week, there's 31 first-place votes. Tennessee got 20. A&M got 7. Arkansas got 3. Kentucky got 1. So there's no real consensus on who the best team is right now.
Let me rephrase that. Do you buy? How was I going to word that? The number one jinx, like the
yes. Well, I don't know that I buy it as a jinx. Now, there's something to be said, you know, for the fact that a number one overall seed hadn't won the national championship since '99. But I do think that there's something to when you've got that number one attached to your name, it brings out just a little bit extra in your opponents.
In the opponent, yeah.
And I think it probably makes it probably adds a little bit of unnecessary pressure to the team that's wearing the collar too.
I don't think it affects the team. I really don't. When it's a good feeling to be the person on top that mm-hmm. everyone wants to be. You walk out on the field, and baseball's mental. When you're number one, I think you walk out on the field and you act like number one and you play like number one. I don't know that it's I don't know if these guys feel pressure when they were one. I don't believe in the whole jinx thing. I think that's just coincidence that no one's won it since '99.
You think?
But I don't know. I mean, maybe. I mean, we're getting to the point where you got to say, okay, maybe there is something to it because that's a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. It's just I don't buy into it yet.
There have been a lot of number one teams or number one, you know, overall seeds that did not come out of the SEC or I'd put the ACC in this conversation too because I think ACC baseball is really good. You know, so I think some of that's probably a byproduct of. I'm going to use Tulane as an example. In 05, I think Tulane was the number one overall seed. They're like 50-something and, you know, really good record. But who have they really played?
Exactly.
You know, so I think there may be a little bit of that. But, I mean, you've had great teams like Arkansas in 21, Tennessee in 22. They didn't even make it to Omaha. So, I don't know.
Yeah, 21 was a tough one.
I know this. I think if you're going into the NCAA tournament in a couple of 3 weeks – you'd be happy being the number two versus being the number one just based on history.
Yeah. And, you know, we're sitting here looking at our record, and we're like, well, we're picking our team apart. Like, well, we're not, our left fielders aren't getting it done. Our DHs aren't. But look where we're at. Look at all the other teams. Ask Missouri what they want to be. They want to be where we're at. You know, I mean, it's I don't know. I think we get spoiled here. 17-7, 40-9 overall. We're good. We are a good team that finds ways to win. Now we can be better though.
Tennessee goes to Vanderbilt this weekend. Vanderbilt, kind of like Kentucky, you get them on that turf at home.
Yep.
And you know there's an advantage to playing there just because you know that surface so well. We'll see what happens. And Vanderbilt, like I said, I think Vanderbilt's a lot better team than they're showing right now. They just got swept at Georgia over the weekend. Didn't look real good in it. I think they're a better team. There's more talent there than what the record shows. And they're going to have their backs against the wall. And I think Corbin's an outstanding coach. And I think he's going to have them ready for the last 2 weeks. I would be surprised if they didn't put up a good fight.
Okay, you want my Vandy theory?
Sure.
Vandy wastes too much time doing all that crap down the left field line, or right field. Yeah, all that stuff, all that show me stuff, you know, look at me stuff. That's where all their energy goes. They need to focus a little bit more on, hey, just getting it done on the field. I hate that. I'm sorry. There's stuff that I can tolerate, but when I watch Vandy do all that stupid stuff, I'm like, you guys ought to be in the dugout getting ready to win this next inning. But that's just me.
So I was listening to Todd Walker on SEC Network over the weekend, and he said that, you know, he thought Arkansas was the best team in the country. Like, who do you think is the best team? And how about we look at it this way? You're going to say Arkansas. I know you're going to say Arkansas.
Maybe not.
I think, okay, let's do it. Go.
You want to ask me?
Yeah, who do you think is the number one team? You think it's A&M?
Arkansas. No. No, I tell you what. Honestly, I'll tell you who. I've watched them play a bunch, and I know they lost 2 out of 3 this weekend. To me, A&M is really good. I look at their lineup.
Really well-rounded.
They've got pitching. Mm-hmm. They score runs. They've got guys up and down a lineup. Lavalette's a stud. I mean, they've got everything. So, honestly, and it pains me to say that, you know, but that's just me being brutally honest. I think they're a good team right now. I can't even say BEST, but they're a really good team right now.
Yeah. I mean, the thing about A&M that's interesting to me, I think A&M is kind of the it didn't look like this against LSU because they lost some lower scoring games, but they're almost kind of like the inverse of Arkansas. You know, we're sitting here talking about Arkansas's got this great pitching, but they got to find some offense to match it. At A&M, what you're seeing a little bit is that their pitching has had pockets where they looked really great, but then they also have weekends like they had against Alabama where they gave up like 25 runs, and against Georgia where they give up a 9-run first inning. And, you know, they've got this – I think they've got the best lineup in the SEC. I think they're a little bit better than Kentucky. Kentucky's right there. But it's like the inverse. You know, it's like, hey, when are we going to find this consistent pitching that supplements the offense?
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, I remember when they gave up, eight in the first inning.
They gave up 9 in the first inning to Georgia and ended up run-ruling Georgia. Most insane outcome, I think, this year.
Because we were on the air. We were in a broadcast when that happened. And I was going to say, but watch, A&M's going to score 10 in the bottom half. And they scored 8. I was going to say it, and then Phil called a pitch. Something big happened. I never got back to it. But they're just a good offensive team. And like I said, I've watched them play, and I like the way they play the game. I really do. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think they're good.
Did you see Jim Schlossnagel's comments about what did he say? He said that there was a team who got busted in the SEC for having a live feed in the dugout. Now, what does live feed mean? You know, that's really up for debate. Somebody asked Van Horn about it at Swatters Club on Monday, and he said, it wasn't us. You know, I think that they've heard that, you know, because the numbers kind of are similar. Arkansas at that time, relative to what, you know, Schlossnagel's comments was, and they said you need to look at somebody in the other division.
So, I mean, the numbers point to Vandy, if you look at the numbers, from what I gather. But if you're Schlossnagel, if you're going to say that, you don't just throw it out there and throw it on the wall.
But what's a live feed?
I don't know, are we talking
about TrackMan looking at a tablet in the dugout?
No, it can't. It's got to be something. It's got to be something else. I don't know if it's a live feed like the broadcast, like the TV broadcast, and they're seeing something on there that could be beneficial. You know, when I first thought live feed, I thought, okay, they're talking about a live feed. Like there's a mic in there where they can hear dugout chatter. They can hear the talk. They can hear what the coaches are saying. But think about if there was a live feed in our dugout, you can't, there's so much talking going on. You can't tell who's talking, what DVH is saying. And I don't know what a live feed, Phil and I were trying to figure it out. Mm-hmm. What is the definition of a live feed? I'm going to ask DVH on Friday if he knows what a live feed is, but I don't think you say something like that. If you're going to say something like that, don't just throw it out there. So all the coaches are like, oh wait, say this team has a live feed in their mm-hmm. dugout and say what a live feed is. And at least that's me. If you're going to throw it out there, own it and say, this is who it is.
And you probably need to keep it to yourself. I mean, the internal politics like that, you need to.
Yeah, because I think he probably made a lot of SEC coaches mad, and they probably view him different after saying that.
And I'm talking about that from a coach's standpoint. No problem right. with like a reporter going in and digging and finding something like that. But I think from a coach's standpoint, there's kind of like this code of, yeah, you know, don't spill the beans, right?
Right, exactly. I mean, are you going to ask him next weekend at 8:00?
I don't know if I'm going to be there, but probably not.
If you go, will you ask him for me? Say, hey, what is a live feed? Jim, please.
If I go there and I talk to Jim Schlossnagel, what's the chances of one is slim, the other even slimmer?
Tell him Bubba Carpenter wants to know what a live feed is and see what you get.
We mentioned Arkansas on finals week. I've always had this theory that teams that are coming off of finals struggle a little bit that weekend. Maybe I'm wrong, but you know, I think about basketball. They always end up playing at North Little Rock the weekend after the fall finals, and that's never gone great. Arkansas, you know, Mother's Day weekend is always it's graduation weekend too. But that's the weekend after finals. It's kind of up and down. You know, they played South Carolina here last year. I thought they played fine that weekend. The year before it was Vanderbilt. They didn't play so well that weekend. Kentucky, they were coming off finals playing Arkansas. They didn't play great Friday night, but then they picked it back up day two and day three. What are your thoughts? Because you've been in that situation.
I don't know my stats after finals week, but I can tell you.
Do you remember your finals scores, your grades?
No, they were good enough. Let's put it that way. No, I think so. Baseball is such a mental game. When you get done with finals, it's like a big sigh of relief. Mm-hmm. I am done with school now. I feel like a professional baseball player because all I got to do is wake up, eat and go to the yard and play baseball. So for me, I'm relaxed and I'm ready to play baseball. So for me, it's all baseball in my brain. No classwork, nothing else to worry about but baseball. So I would think that you go out refreshed and ready to just hammer somebody since finals are over.
People have asked too, you know, why does Arkansas's schedule play out like this every year where they end up on the road the final weekend and they're always at home, you know, on this penultimate weekend of the SEC season, and it's based on finals schedule. They're not going to send a team who has had finals on the road that weekend. And so because of the way Arkansas's academic calendar sets up, they play here this weekend. They go on the road next weekend. They finished on the road, I think, like 11 of the last 12 years. The one exception was against Florida in 21, where they ended up clinching here on the final weekend against Florida, swept them. And that was due to, it was based on like Memorial Day fell later in May that year. And so there was like I think there might have been not an extra weekend, but in terms of how the U of A schedule lined up against the SEC tournament schedule, there was an extra weekend in there. That's how Arkansas got the last series at home that year. Just kind of interesting little side note there. Going back to Arkansas, their lineup, Peyton Stovall's hitting well. I think Hudson White is coming around. Aloy is doing that thing again where he's hitting them hard and they're just not falling, but that's usually a pretty good sign that, you know, a good hitting streak is going to come up for him. What do you think this weekend as they get ready to play Mississippi State? Because Mississippi State reminds me a lot of Arkansas. They don't pitch as well as Arkansas does, but just in terms of they are built – around pitching and defense, they're right there with Arkansas in the top two or three of those categories in SEC only.
I mean, you look at SEC only, you know, our ERA is 3.82. They're second with 4.68. They're first in SEC in defense. We're second. Mm-hmm. What is it, 984, I believe, and we're 983.
A&M was number one. They had five errors at Baton Rouge.
Yeah, so, A&M had a bad weekend.
Kicked it around a lot.
Yeah, that was awesome. I've got some LSU parents, a great family that is part of our mm-hmm. organization, and they wear their LSU stuff proudly inside the facility, which used to be frowned on. But I told them, I said, look, I was pulling for the first time ever, I pulled for LSU this weekend. But, you know, if you look at the numbers, they're pretty – their pitching isn't far behind us. Defense is right there. Now, they score more runs. They're sixth in SEC in runs scored. We're 10th. Sixth in batting average. We're 12th in batting average. They're 274, we're 240. So they have a slight advantage there, but we have the Baum Walker advantage, 31-2 at home, mm-hmm. 11-1 in SEC play. So yep. I think that's the great equalizer right there. Plus we got Hagan Smith on a Friday night. Weather's going to be great. I just think it looks good for us this weekend. I really do. But they are a team playing well. But teams that play well, when they come to Baum Walker, it's just different, Matt. There is something about Baum Walker. And that's why, all these people that are like, oh, they're down on the Razorbacks. We're not scoring. We're not doing this. I don't care. As long as we get home field advantage, I really like our chances of going to Omaha. And then you get to Omaha, that's the kind of ballpark we're going to do well in because we don't hit a lot of home runs. You don't see a lot of home runs there. Pitching and defense wins in Omaha. And so – I mean, it plays right into our hand.
Yeah, it feels like that park in Omaha, Arkansas, could do a lot of damage, at least defensively and pitching-wise.
Yeah, I think so.
Mississippi State's interesting because after they won the national championship the last 2 years, it kind of feels like, that's a team you don't really have to worry about, and they're better this year.
Yeah, they're good. The talent's there, but more importantly, they're playing really well right now, mm-hmm. which means a lot when a team gets hot, and they're hot right now. They're playing well. They're pitching well. They're playing good defense. They're getting enough hits to win. But I still like our chances with them coming in into Baum Walker, and I'm really looking forward to seeing the ambidextrous pitcher. That's something.
I got my pronunciation guide pulled up here. Gerangelo Sanja.
Okay, good, because I wasn't going to attempt that. But okay.
What's funny is in their pronunciation guide, they don't have Gerangelo. They don't have that. It's like you need to know how to say that. Sanja. That's the name they've got in there.
But
unique name, unique pitcher.
Unique pitchers. Okay, so one thing I don't think I've ever seen, I guess I've never paid attention to it. BHP, both-handed pitcher.
Okay, yeah.
So I just wanted to see a little bit about the guy. So when he was ranked first BHP in the state of Florida, ranked first, mm-hmm. ranked first nationally when he was coming out of high school.
Yeah, he was a big-time prospect.
Yeah, and he played shortstop too. But I wonder how many both-handed pitchers are there in that ranking? Because he's ranked number one, nation. He's
one of one.
Yeah. So I just wonder, because in all my years of looking over stuff, maybe I've missed it, but I don't know of any other. I know there's been other guys, but I don't remember seeing a ranking for a both-handed pitcher.
There was a guy in the Yankees organization, right?
Yes.
And he actually came through here. I believe he played at Creighton. And I think Creighton came through here at a regional like 06, 07, and he was playing in that regional. Tim Lincecum was in the same regional, by the way, with Washington. Just a little side note, a couple of unique pitchers that came through. Baum. But, yeah, I mean, that's interesting because they're going to face him this weekend. And, the other thing that's interesting to me is that I think they've got some really good position players. Hunter Hines is not hitting quite like people thought he would, but there was some thought before the season that he might be one of those dark horse SEC Player of the Year candidates. Dakota Jordan comes in this weekend, 367. Connor Hyzak, 349. David Marchone, 339. So they've got some pop in their lineup.
Well, they do, but they haven't faced Razorback pitching either. So typically when you're facing Razorback pitcher, those numbers all tend to go down. Like you look at Kentucky, mm-hmm. They were hitting 314. As a team going into the weekend, I think they left hitting 306 or 308 or something like that. I know their numbers went down because of Razorback pitching, and that tends to happen.
Importance of the weekend for Arkansas, because I mean it's an important series. Every SEC series is important, but it feels like they gotta I mean, win the series, obviously, but you'd love to be able to have a sweep if you're going to go into College Station with a chance to, you know, play for a division or an SEC championship.
Okay, so what's your thoughts on securing a national seed? I mean, we're at 17 wins.
I mean,
if we
get
to 20 wins.
They're
awfully
close now.
Yeah, I mean.
Maybe two more regular season wins and a win in Hoover. Yeah. That should do it.
So if we can win two or three this weekend.
And that's really the Friday point night right now, right? I mean, that's really the objective right now.
Yeah.
You want to win the division.
Yeah.
You want to win the SEC. But you want to win the national championship more than anything. And I think the best path for this team is obviously get a top eight national seed. Doesn't matter if you're one. Doesn't matter if you're four. Maybe you don't want to be one. But, you know, doesn't matter if you're two. Doesn't matter if you're four, five, eight, whatever the case may be. Just make sure you can play at bomb.
Right.
Because this team plays different at home. They're a better hitting team at home. A better pitching team at home. They play defense better at home. Everything's better in Fayetteville. Obviously got the home crowd advantage. That's your best path to Omaha. So,
yeah
I mean, I'd say if they haven't already locked one up, and they may have, now you go 0-8 down the stretch, that kind of stinks. But, you know, maybe two, three more wins. I think that would do the trick for them because that puts you at 43.
Yeah, and I go off of SEC wins. If you win 19 games in SEC, I think you're national seed. 20, you're locked in.
Yeah.
So we win two out of three.
I mean, a lot of times that wins you an SEC championship. It's just this year it's a top heavy league. The bottom of the league is not as competitive with the top as it usually is. You know, like you're going to see what's Missouri? What's their record right now in the SEC? I think it's
crappy.
Like 6-7 wins. You know, a lot of times you'll see that Eastern or whoever, the cellar dweller in the division, they might have 9 or 10 wins. You're not going to see that this year.
No, you're not.
Auburn's certainly not going to get there.
No. Auburn, boy, and that's a disappointment. I thought Auburn was a better team, but they have lost a ton of really close games, and then now towards the end they're kind of fading.
Yeah. Going to lose confidence and hope, I feel like.
I mean, but I thought they were a better team. I thought they were a team we were going to see later in the year. But, you know, you look at everything. What I like is we control our own destiny. We don't have to worry about what anyone else does. If we go out and take care of business this weekend, we go to A&M, I still think we're going to do well. Our pitching is going to keep us in the games. I still say we're this close. Now, we're not going to score 10 runs a game, but it's not what you hit, it's when you hit. We're getting runners on base. We just got to have a few big two-out, that two-out RBI hit. Like we got Friday night from Kendall Diggs. Mm-hmm. We need a couple of guys to get those hits, and we could win this series, and we could go in and win a series at A&M. Really think we can. I think we're going to score against their pitching.
I think they'll score against A&M's pitching.
Yeah, I think we will.
I feel like this weekend, it reminds me a little bit of that. I mentioned the South Carolina weekend last year. Remember all those games were real low scoring for the most part?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of feels like it could be like that again this weekend.
Could be.
And it goes back to your point that the two-out hits really become really magnified in that type of situation. Those games were like 3-1, 5-1. Low scoring games.
But don't you feel like at home we get those hits? There's something about bomb walker magic. There's something to it. They used to talk about Yankee Stadium magic. There's bomb walker magic where we get those hits in those big moments.
And players feel better hitting at home, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you're in your home ballpark, everything, we're creatures of habit. You do, I don't know. You just feel like you do everything better at home. You've got your regular routine. You feel good in your home batter's box. There's something about stepping up to the plate at Baum Walker. You got that batter's eye. You got the lights. You got the crowd. You just feel good. And there's something about feeling good when you step up to the plate. It's a mental thing. And if you feel good, you perform good.
Well, Arkansas, Mississippi State this weekend, like we said, it's a little bit more interesting of a series than I think we thought it would be at the beginning of the season. Mississippi State was picked to finish 7th in the SEC West, and here they are still fighting for a potential division championship. The first two games are going to be on SEC Network Plus. The last game is going to be on SEC Network. Game times this weekend, 6:30, 6 o'clock, and 2 o'clock. And by the way, they have flexed all three of the A&M games now to network TV. All three of those will be on either ESPN2 or SEC Network next weekend in College Station. Big stretch run here coming for Arkansas. Could still win the SEC, could still win the SEC West. But like we said, most importantly, just try to get yourself in a position to get one of those top eight national seeds, and they're in a really good position to do that, irregardless of what happened last week in Lexington. For Bubba Carpenter, I'm Matt Jones. Hope you come to WholeHogSports.com throughout the weekend, and we'll see you next week on the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast.
Thanks to Kendall King, where their design talents are showcased by teamwork. Kendall King, Shop Cart, and Soapbox. They're your design professionals with home run stats.